accession number 18333, Reel 3.
And Reel 3. We did have quite a lot of contact with the South Koreans, in so much that we used their labor as porters to carry food, equipment, logs, and materials for defense, wire, and that sort of thing. On one occasion, I was taken out of the front line, and I had to move some anti-tank guns up onto a position where the Gloucesters had been, where they'd fought and been rather badly mauled. It was a very high ridge, and there were no tracks as such up this ridge, and we used these porters to carry up the anti-tank weaponry. They had to be stripped down to barrel, breech, wheels and things like that. And the actual barrel weighed well over a ton. And to get that up this very steep incline hill was no mean feat. And you had about 20 men on either side of this barrel with ropes pulling it up this hill. They did it. They were tough little so-and-sos. Not we ever spoke, could understand them, because very few of them spoke any English, and none of us spoke Korean. But getting to I think it was four anti-tank guns up that hill was a hell of a task, and it took us a long time.
What was the state of the civilian population in 51-52?
Pretty poor. They lived in abject poverty in small villages behind the lines. The roads were appalling, just tracks. I remember on one occasion, you asked me if there were any incidents, I'd had to go back to Echelon to get something for the company. And I was in an open Jeep. And we drove down this incredibly rutted road. And we passed a battery of New Zealand gunners. Having done whatever I had to do, I was coming back, and these gunners were obviously lying in wait for us to arrive, because just as we passed the battery position, they opened fire on an enemy somewhere, and one was right in front of the barrels. I mean, they weren't pointed at us, but they were over our heads when they fired. And we were all deafened for quite some considerable time. And these gunners used to take delight in doing this whenever a vehicle passed. And I suspect that's partly one of the reasons why I'm deaf in this left ear. And also that grenade that wounded me may have caused some of the reason for my deafness. But the Australians and New Zealanders were always sort of trying to sort of take the mickey out of people.
Was there any sickness amongst the troops in Korea?
No, remarkably little. I mean, you obviously did get the odd illness, but health-wise, it seems to me that we were all pretty fit. And that's probably why we didn't get any sort of real sickness, I should think. You certainly had to be fit to live under those conditions.
Were there any songs that you sang in Korea?
Songs? No, not that I can remember. Neil Pullen may have known some, I don't know.
Now, jumping ahead from Korea, I think yeah. you also had a spell in the confrontation with Indonesia in the 60s.
Yes. We were based in Ipoh, well, at least I joined the Malaysian Rangers in 1965.
Was this a secondment?
A secondment for 3 years with the Malaysian Rangers. We went out with the family to Ipoh. My children then were about 8. And we lived in a very nice house in Ipoh, but were training for going over to Borneo. So we did a lot of jungle work. And eventually we were flown from Ipoh in old Dakotas to an RAF base eastern Borneo, a place called Tower. And from there, we went by launch onto an island called Sabatic, which was half British and half Indonesian. We had company bases along the line of the front. I was company commander then, and I had with me 2 105s fired by Malaysian gunners, but under my control. Detachment of mortars, 3-inch mortars, 61mm mortars. And the 4 companies were spread out along the front. It wasn't a very big island, so we just covered that area. But we lived in little company bases with trenches again. But they couldn't be very deep because the water table was extremely high. I was my own boss and controlled that sector of the front. We patrolled fairly vigorously. In theory, we weren't supposed to cross the front. But in practice, we did send patrols over the front line. If we got information from these patrols of enemy positions, then I would shell those positions. But we never actually had any hand-to-hand fighting or anything like that. It was coming towards the end of confrontation, in fact. That was, what, 66, I think I'm right to say. One or two slightly amusing incidents. I was the only officer who went to war with a butterfly net at that stage. I was a keen lepidopterist. And washing facilities on the island were pretty few and far between. We built our own showers, but all water had to be brought from the mainland in containers. So, although we were kept clean enough, we didn't have a mass of water. The water that was there was pretty foul. We had a stream just outside the camp base, which I used to wash in, to have a full wash, but it was pretty murky water. And as it flowed through a village further upstream, the village was deserted, but you know what Asians are like. They don't... they tend to defecate in water and all sorts of things like that. Anyway, having said that, I went down to the bathing spot. I suppose the stream is about as wide from here to the wall. Had a little bridge across it, wooden bridge, and I took two sentries with me, two belays, one for the far bank and one guarding me back while I was in the water. And suddenly the most beautiful butterfly that I'd ever seen.
Don't bother to show me.
Well, there's one there, actually, but that was yellow something or other. Anyway, this landed very close to me on the strut of the bridge. I hadn't got my net, so I set my sentry on the rear bank, near bank, back to get my net, and as it came back with the net, it flew off, and there I was, absolutely stark naked, so I ran after it, up the bank of the stream, and the sun was setting right behind me. And there I was, stark naked with this butterfly net, and a sentry post of mine was just coming to sort of stand to, and he didn't know what to do. He suddenly saw this apparition, stark naked, chasing a butterfly. I got it in the end. Otherwise, it was a fairly quiet period. But we did have one scare on a patrol when I wasn't on this patrol, but I had a platoon commander there doing it. And they came across a whole lot of figures. They could see through the undergrowth, and they thought they'd hit a Indonesian patrol, but in fact it turned out to be monkeys, tall, I can't remember what they're called, not the orangutan.
Lemurs?
Pardon?
Lemurs?
Could be, but they stood up very much like a man, and they thought at first they hit an enemy patrol, but I think the monkeys were more scared of them than they were of them themselves. Another incident, my wife wanted a snake skin to make a bag out of, or have a bag made of. And there were quite a lot of pythons in this area. And I asked one of my patrols when they went out if they saw one, not to shoot, because that would have raised the alarm, but to try and capture one. And sure enough, they came across one at the base of a tree, half in and half out of a hole. And these two Malays were struggling at the tail end to pull this bloody python out. They didn't get it, the python won. There were also a lot of very wild boar around. And another patrol came rushing in, saying in Malay that they'd found this wild pig. What was I going to do about it? So I thought, well, presumably they don't want to eat it, but nevertheless, if it was on the patrol route, we wanted to get rid of it because they do attack. So I grabbed a rifle, and it was only comparatively close to the patrol base, company base, and off we went. Came round a bend in this track, and there was this enormous boar, and it looked as if it was just charging. And I threw the rifle up, fired, and I got it straight between the eyes and killed it. And I felt an absolute swine having done that, because I suddenly realised it had been caught in a snare and it couldn't move. But I wasn't risking it at the time. They're vicious thing. To my amazement, despite the fact that they're Muslims, chaps took the pig back And that was cut up and eaten very happily by them, which rather surprised me.
What was the composition of the Milesian Rangers?
This battalion, it was the 2nd Battalion Milesian Rangers, consisted in the main of soldiers from Borneo and Sarawak. There were a few Malays. I mean, my sergeant major was a Malay. But in that, at this particular instance, while we were there, we were officered by Brits. Most of the senior sergeant majors were Brits. But towards the end, we were becoming completely sort of Malaysianized, and the CO left. In fact, when I left, there were only three of us British officers left, and a couple of British sergeants. The rest had all been posted and been Malaysianized with a view to them running themselves. In fact, my the commanding officer, when our British one left, became the chief of the Malaysian army. You know, I can't remember his name. He was a super chap, and I was very, very happy to serve under him. He was more British than Brits, actually. I mean, he really was pro-British, whereas most of them were anti-British in the main.
In what way were they?
Well, they didn't like the Brits running them. But, having said that, they were... The 2nd Battalion was a good good regiment, good battalion.
But would they express anti-British feelings to you?
No, they wouldn't do that so much, but they would... Staff at headquarters would be difficult, not battalion headquarters, Malaysian headquarters. They were always trying to put things in your way of improving things.
What type of things were they obstructing?
Well, I mean, if you wanted something, it would... probably come eventually, but it would be I'm not talking quite so much about this in the confrontation period. I'm talking about being back in Malaya itself. It would come too late, and they would obstruct you and things that way, sort
these,
of thing.
These are supplies, you
mean? Yes, that's right, yeah.
But not,
I must state, not during confrontation and actually in Borneo. No, it was all right there.
But we get slowness of supplies in the museum. That doesn't mean to say it's anti-British.
Yeah, probably not that, except that. But you knew there was an undercurrent of not really liking the Brits very much. And so they were very pleased to finally get themselves completely in Malaysia. You know.
So were these soldiers Dyaks?
Some were, but they were mainly from Borneo. They were very much like a Gurkha in sort of attitude. They were good, tough lads. And I was very fond of them, actually. Whereas the Malay is a bit of an idol, so-and-so. And would be quite happy to sleep underneath a coconut tree rather than do some work.
So the soldiers were not Malays so much, and they weren't Dyaks.
Sarawakan and Borneo, but they made the mistake of having two battalions of the Malaysia Rangers entirely manned, or practically entirely manned, from Borneo. And they became very afraid that they could cause trouble. And so when it came for us to finally sort of hand over, they started breaking the battalions up and mixing them with many, many, many more Malays in them. So these lads were being pushed from one Malaysian battalion to another.
So were they good shots, for example?
it's not bad. If they were trained properly, then they would become reasonable shots.
Were they brave?
Yes, I think so. We didn't actually have to come to any hand-to-hand fighting, as I said before. But it was interesting 3 years. We started off in Ypres, then we did a year in Borneo. Then we came back to Kuala Kubu Baru, which was underneath the spine of mountains that runs up Malaya, Cameron Highlands. My family stayed in Ypres in a very comfortable house. And I commuted at weekends to go back up to Malaya because it was about 100 miles and you couldn't do it daily. Up to Ypres. A lot of families, actually, British families, opted to go back to the UK when we went over to Borneo. We worked on the principle, why be uncomfortable at home by yourself, where you can be very comfortable in Malaya, in a nice house, armours and what have you. And although we were separated for most of the time we were in Malaysia, we did see at least a bit of each other, which we wouldn't have done if they'd gone home.
Could I just finally ask you about the Second World War? Did you grow up as a schoolboy in Gerrard's Cross in the Second World War?
I grew up as a schoolboy at school in Horsham, Christ Hospital. Obviously, I went home for the holidays, but most of my time was there at school. And we had some fairly interesting times there.
In what sense?
Well, we were in the path of the flying bombs.
Any of them fall nearby?
Yes, quite close. I was in the school sanatorium, having been injured in a cricket match. And there was a most almighty explosion, not very far from the sanatorium. And this doodlebug came down. And I was covered from head to foot in glass from the windows. I wasn't hurt, but it was a fairly nasty experience. One day we were playing cricket, and we'd watch these doodlebugs fly over us. And although there wasn't much chance of escaping it if they stopped, as soon as the engine cut out, we all threw ourselves to the ground and waited for it to land wherever. But no one was hurt.
Any V2s?
Not there. They were the ones that hit London.
Or any ordinary bombs?
Well, I suppose they unloaded a few on their way back if they hadn't dropped the whole lot. I remember one night when I'd gone up to during the holidays to my parents, who were, my father was in the RAF, as I told you, and he was based at Stockton, near Darlington. And at the bottom of our garden, we had a battery of AK-AK guns. And father said, I suppose I was about 12 or something like this then. Father said, if they fire, they do make a lot of noise. So I said, okay, well, I suppose it'll worry me. And we did get raided that night, or the aerodrome did. And these guns opened up, and the racket was phenomenal. I never heard such crashes. I thought we were actually being bombed by the Germans. It wasn't an anti-aircraft fire.
That was at Stockton?
That was at Stockton, yes. My father was down here, actually, also at West Wittering.
What was life like for a schoolboy in the Second World War like yourself, apart from the V1s?
Well, I suppose food was not very good. but then school food never is very good. So I'm told, and I remember it. We really weren't terribly bothered by it. We played our rugby, we played our cricket. We marched through London on Lord Mayor's Day, because it's Founders Day, 23rd of October. No, Founders Day, and we used to march to the school band, to the Mansion House, where we received, depending on your seniority, largesse from the Lord Mayor, and they still do it. As a house captain and school prefect, I think I got 5 guineas when I left. A lot of money in those days. When I was a youngster, very junior, I got 6 pence.